Prime Minister Scott Morrison is ramping up support for more technology investment as the best way to decarbonise our economy without fuelling divisions within the coalition. This comes as the business community escalates demands for Australia to embrace net zero emissions by 2050, a target that's being blocked and mocked by some key nationals.
We're saying the net zero by 2050 because the science directs us there is the place to start. But then the how really matters. How are we going to do this in a way that drives technology? How are we going to do it in a way that drives regional jobs? How are we going to do it in a way that preserves affordability and reliability? How are we going to do it in a way that brings the community along? Because if we do not do that, we will go back to the kind of decade we've had where we make a start and then we stop.
That's Jennifer Westacott, Chief Executive of the Business Council of Australia, speaking to us earlier in the week. Well, one business leader who's long been on board with a net zero emissions target is Mike Cannon-Brookes, the co-founder and co-chief executive of software company Atlassian. Today, he's doing his bit, pledging $12 million to roll out solar and battery solutions for fire-affected communities through a renewable energy alliance called the Resilient Energy Collective, a philanthropic venture with his wife, Annie. Mike Cannon-Brookes joins me in the breakfast studio. Mike, welcome back to breakfast.
Thanks for having me, Fran.
On Monday, we spoke to the BCA chief, Jennifer Westacott, after the BCA trucked demountables into the small fire-ravaged town of Mogo to support fire-damaged small businesses. You're bringing in a more technological solution. What is it you're going to be bringing into towns?
Look, Fran, we're bringing in a system. So it's based on a series of rapid rollout solar panels combined with batteries and a lot of smart technology to get people back up and running with power in under a day.
And how many are you trying to do this quite quickly?
So we have capacity to do 100 different sites in 100 days. We have three live at the moment and two more that are rolling out right now.
And you're doing this with Tesla, I understand, as well as a solar panel company.
Yes. Yeah. So the solar panels come from one company. The batteries come from another. They kind of get put together in a system. We put them on a truck and we roll them out. So we wanted to be very action-oriented and actually get them out there.
And this is a philanthropic venture that you and your wife, Annie, have come up with. How much of your own money are you putting into this?
So we're funding it up to $12 million.
Okay. And why are you doing it?
Well, I mean, like everyone else, we saw what happened over the summer and trying to use the skills, the contacts, and the know-how we have to actually make a difference and get people back up and running in some part of their life.
Doing this so quickly, 100 units, 100 days is what you think you could do. Have you spoken much to the communities? Is this what they're telling you they want, solar panels and batteries? Has there been much consultation?
There has. The community reaction has been amazing. So if you look at the first unit we rolled out in Cobargo, it was costing the RFS one of their four trucks for 5 hours a day to refuel a generator with diesel. That RFS unit is just blown away that this stuff exists. You know, the reaction was sort of, I thought this was 10 years in the future. Wow, it happens today. Does it work at nighttime? All the normal things, but the
Does it work at nighttime?
Absolutely. The almost tearful reaction of saving them time and getting people back online. We put a community hall back online. It's simple and it works.
It's simple. In fact, it's so simple. I think I read somewhere that you said technology can get at Bunnings.
Well, the only technology we've invented, we said we can get at Bunnings. So Most of the other pieces are already on the shelf. That's part of our point is this. We didn't invent any technology here, put it together in a relatively smart system, got it on trucks, got it out there and plugged it in.
Okay. The reason I was wondering about consultation was because there's one resident of Cobargo, Zena Armstrong, quoted today, voicing concerns about projects like this one with the broader fear that they could push out local energy providers that, you know, she says Cobargo's interested in turning their town into a microgrid. And if, you know, you come in with this bit and you come in with that bit, it might take away from those who are already in the process of trying to set up something like that.
Get them to talk to us. We'd love to take the whole town offline. Secondly, it's been done in concert with a whole series of really great energy companies. So Essential Energy, AusNet, there's a series of energy companies we're working with who really want this stuff to work. It gives them a chance to test new technologies, and they want to get the residents up online, community facilities, infrastructure, just as much as the residents.
But that's interesting. Energy companies working with you, because wouldn't this supplant what they're offering, so they won't be billing people?
No, because they have an obligation to provide the energy, right? So either they're going to rebuild a whole series of poles and wires that got smashed by the fire, or they're going to come up with another solution. They have an obligation to provide power to that household and to restore it as quickly as possible.
Is this what you're bringing in? Are these long-term options for people? Will these keep going forever? And who's paying for it? Do people have to pay for it?
So it's deployed in a day. At the moment, they're paying for diesel. They have a generator as the best backup, or they have no power at all. We roll it out in a day. It can sit there 20 years.
But is anyone paying you for it?
No, no one's paying us for it at the moment. So we said, look, have more for a year. We'll work it out. If the energy company want to rent it after that, if they reconnect the wires, we'll take them away. We can roll them up in a day and take them away.
And, you know, firing up, you know, the police emergency system is one thing. Could you power a whole town with this?
Depending on the size of the town and how many units, sure. I mean, theoretically, you could power all sorts of things. We've got individual houses that we're doing at the moment, community halls, various infrastructure. As you mentioned, like our first project was a RFS and police radio tower.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just electricity at the end of the day.
Is it fair to say you're not doing this for totally philanthropic motives, that there's a political message behind this too, because you're shifting these communities away from old energy, away from diesel in the short term, and it'd be good for reducing carbon emissions?
I don't see it as a political message as much as just showing people what the technology we already have today can do, right? Even if you talk to the residents, even some of the energy companies, they're amazed at this stuff, how cheap it is and how available it is today with off-the-shelf technology. We need to think of different solutions to make these communities more resilient to any future fire, flood or weather events.
So you're bringing in these new technologies at the same time the Prime Minister is preparing to release the government's technology investment roadmap. Presumably this Scott Morrison would applaud your initiative. Has the government brought you or other tech leaders on board behind his plan for a tech roadmap?
We've certainly done some talking with them. I think the technology investment roadmap itself has not been released.
No.
So we'll certainly be reading it in detail. I mean, there's no doubt technology is a portion of the future solutions. It depends on what's in the roadmap, which technologies is very important.
So the PM says it's technology, not taxation or carbon price. It's the best way to bring our emissions down. As a tech leader, do you agree with that then?
No, I wouldn't agree with that. I think it's a very political statement. We have to have a target of where we're getting to, right? The technology investment roadmap does not remove the need for a net zero target. You have to have a target and then you have to have a series of solutions. One of those solutions will be technology to get to that target. If you have solutions,
could
with
all
no
the solution
target,
be technology?
No, I don't think all the solution will be technology, right? There's got to be economic solutions, there's got to be industry transition solutions. There's a whole series of things that are going to be needed, not just technology. The other thing I would say is the technology we need to get to net zero, we have today. How we roll it out, how we get it into systems is different than do we need to invent new things. So it depends on what the roadmap is. We haven't seen it yet.
Well, can we talk about what you think the roadmap would be? Because for most of us, I think we have really no idea what that means, a technology investment target or a technology roadmap. What do you think that looks like?
I'm not sure because I haven't seen the roadmap
yet.
There's obviously a lot of fears. It involves things like carbon capture and storage and investment in fossil fuel-based technologies. We'll see.
Gas, the government's talking about gas as the fuel, the transition fuel.
Whether or not we need gas as a transition fuel, I would argue no. Probably Scott Morrison says yes. That doesn't mean we need more gas. There's a very different line between those two. But the important thing is to work out what technologies are they planning to invest in. If it's renewable hydrogen, if it's pumped hydro, if it's other things that we could roll out at larger scales, absolutely. If it's ways to get storage solutions, if it's high voltage DC lines, for example, to provide distribution of the energy across the continent. We have an amazing continent for energy production, especially in the west of Australia. Getting it to the east of Australia, these are technologies we should be investing in for sure.
And would this require a major investment from government, or would it only require government laying out the plan and then they will build?
They have to set the parameters to let the market solve the problems over time. If you look back at any country that's made meaningful strides in this area, it ends up being some sort of market-based mechanism. That can happen in a lot of different ways. But if people have certainty, if you look at Zali's bill, for example, for net zero, it's not only a net zero target for 2050, it's 5 yearly targets along the way to get there. That gives investment certainty, that gives understanding to business, industry, where they need to go. It doesn't have to happen tomorrow. You know, in 20 years, you need to be in this spot. Great. I can plan how my business is going to get there over that time. I can plan how my industry is going to change.
You're on the same page there with the BCA. We heard Jennifer Westacott earlier. You weren't always in the past. Last year, you described the BCA as a strongly regressive force in the climate debate. Would you say they've switched to a progressive force?
I'm not sure they're a progressive force yet. They have historically been a strongly regressive force, yes. It is great that they're embracing net zero. There's no doubt that business needs to be out in front and lead this, especially when we're not getting leadership from other sectors at the moment. But for sure, business has a huge role to play here. The BCA being aligned around net zero by 2050 is an amazingly big step, and I applaud them for that.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. It's Quarter to Eight. Our guest is Mike Cannon-Brookes from Atlassian. In a moment, we're going to be speaking with the Chair of Innovation and Science Australia. They've got a new report today that shows only 6% of Australian businesses invest in R&D and only around 30% in any form of innovation, what they call non-R&D. As the founder of an innovative company, why do you think that is? That's a very low number, isn't it?
Look, it's one of the problems we have to solve in Australia generally. Right? We're far below the OECD average in R&D investment as a general economy in all businesses. So we have to work out how to get Australian business to innovate more. If you look at our most successful businesses, you see they do have a higher proportion of R&D. So there is a correlation between that in Australia.
What about your company? How much do you invest in R&D? Do you know that?
It depends on what you're referring to by R&D, but we spend about 37% of revenue on R&D.
Okay, so that's a lot.
It's masses.
What is the, do you find, what would speak to you in terms of the hurdles? If we've only got 6% of our businesses doing this, why is that?
Look, I think people need to see that solving problems in innovative and ingenious ways, a little bit like we've done in Renewable Energy Collective, right? It's not like we've invented a solar panel, but we've put them together in new and innovative ways to solve a particular problem that's around today. That's what R&D should be. That's what innovation should be, is solving problems, part of what we have today, part of something that's new, put it together, solve a problem. Australian businesses need to be more innovative in solving those problems, and that's going to require more R&D.
There's been a flurry of philanthropic gestures in the wake of the bushfires. Iron ore miner Andrew Twiggy Forrest, his wife, pledged $70 million to help rebuild communities. Overseas, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos has stumped up a whopping $10 billion. We've got this latest initiative from you. The Edelman Trust survey it released today shows 78% of Australians believe CEOs should take the lead on change rather than wait for governments. Is that a problem in our democracy, do you think, that we leave it to businesses and CEOs to make things happen?
I'm not sure we're leaving it to them as much as they're stepping up into try to take some leadership role where there's a leadership vacuum. I don't think there's a need that politicians can't be leaders. They absolutely should be, right? Obviously, CEOs don't have three-year terms, so they have a little bit of a longer view on how their share price, their company is going to survive over a long term. Anything that's going to help Australians take a longer view in politics and industry is going to be good for us as a country.
Just finally, Mike Cannon-Brookes, Resilient Energy Collective, if communities want to be a part of it, how do they let you know?
If they go to resilientenergy.com.au, they can read more about what we have on offer. They can fill in a form if they have a property, piece of infrastructure that is offline or running on generators, and we'll do our best to liaise with the energy companies to try to get them back online next week, week after that.
You ready to go?
Yeah, we're ready to go.
Mike Cannon-Brookes, thank you very much.
Thanks, friend.
Mike Cannon-Brookes is the co-founder and the co-chief executive of the software company Atlassian, and he and his wife are behind this Resilient Energy Collective.